So I may back up and review a lot of these things as we're going through it, but I want this to be more of a workshop than a lecture. So I am going to lecture on right and wrong answers and why they're right and why they're wrong. But I'd like for you guys to take a few minutes and try to figure out what compound fits with this spectrum. And you're going to need some more information too. You're going to need me to present a little bit more in terms of when we're looking at this spectrum. I've outlined a number of different peaks here, and much like real IR or NMR or mass spec, whatever peaks get picked, and that's what we call this peak picking, which labels the different peaks. Whichever peaks get labeled is your choice as a researcher as to what peaks you think are critically important. So the peaks that get labeled may not be important at all. It is sort of up to you. And what we generally do is we generally set a threshold. Like we'll go through and we'll say, all right, I want all the peaks that are below this threshold to be labeled. And then all the peaks that are deeper than that will wind up being labeled. Sometimes that's a lot of peaks and it's difficult to manage. And so oftentimes what we do is we go in and we say, oh, I want this one and I want this one and that one and that one and that one. And you just pick them. And you're picking them based on peaks that you think might be important, but in the outcome, they may not be. So when you read a spectrum, it's important to understand that not every peak that has a number on it is something that you should analyze or pay attention to. You need to still look in those areas. So what we're saying is the 3,500 area. So we'll pick 3,500, which is sort of in here. We're saying that this area on down to around 3,200. And I would broaden this out, that it's a little bit broader than this. This is the OH and the NH area. And this is that area that we were looking for to say, is there anything showing up in this area that I should be paying attention to? And the other area that we said that was really critically important was that 1750, maybe even up to 1800, all the way down to like 1650, that this area is also critically important and that this is where carbonyls show up at. So this is our carbonyl area. And then beyond that, this is fingerprint. There may be peaks of importance in the fingerprint region, but for right now, we're just going to label that as fingerprint. And then this area here that shows up, I'm going to label it sort of as a green area. This area right here, this is the carbon hydrogen stretch area. This area is generally not important or predictive of anything because it's where the carbon hydrogen stretches happen. And so we use it as a fingerprint to kind of tell us what the carbon hydrogen stretch looks like, but it's not interpretive in any way, really. Just because all of the molecules have carbon and hydrogen in them. Okay, so the important thing to remember, I think, is the different geometries and shapes so that hydroxyl groups are smooth and deep. Carboxylic acids are oftentimes kind of jagged, have that hairy beard shape that would be falling in this red area. Amines tend to have the two peaks. Primary amines tend to only have the one peak. So this is an NH2. This is an R2NH. Put a single R on there. So we have the different shapes of the different types of functional groups that show up in that OH area. And just with that alone, we can probably narrow down this compound and throw out a couple of possibilities. And one of the things when I first start doing spectroscopy is learn what I can throw out and narrow it down to as few possibilities as I can. And then I access more information to try to narrow it down between those two possibilities once I get it down to a smaller number. So is there anything here that we could definitely throw out and say between A, B, C, and D, anything that doesn't fit this spectrum, that doesn't look like it belongs here? You guys wanna either throw it into the chat or unmute your mic and offer me an opinion as to what you think either belongs or does not belong?
It can't be C or D, right?
It can't be C or D, correct. It cannot be C because C has the carboxylic acid, and C would have had the shape that would have been sort of the jagged beard type shape. And it can't be D because D would have had the alcohol shape, and so D is out as well, which means that, yeah, it's really between A and B, and those are demonstrating the carbonyl. So we absolutely do have a carbonyl peak that is here, but we don't know what type. So we have to figure out what type of carbonyl. So let me ask if that makes sense now, looking at this spectrum in terms of the way, usually I don't like to outline a spectrum this much either. I feel like when I start getting so much information on the spectrum that it starts to get hard to read and hard to actually see the spectrum underneath. So maybe what I ought to do is just get rid of these colors so that we can see the shapes a little bit better. I don't know if that makes it easier or not. The other thing is this spectrum is a dark sort of black or gray line, and it doesn't pop particularly on a small screen really well. So if you're like on a cell phone or something, this might be really hard to see, for which I apologize. I can color them red, but it takes me more effort and a drawing program in time to do that. And I was experimenting with how to do that last night. But let's see if we can make this work. And if you're having trouble seeing it, maybe you can let me know and I can try to zoom in on it or do what I need to do in order to get you to see specific regions. But let me stop and ask you guys for feedback. Is this making sense in terms of how we threw out C and D?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, cool. That helps. All right. So let's see if we can figure out between A and B using some more information. So what I have is a table in Pavia, and I'm going to go and try and grab that table from Pavia. And I want to copy this and bring this into our discussion. And we'll zoom it in a little bit. That'll work. Okay. So this is a table out of Pavia that tells us about carbonyls. So this tells us the wavelength that we would see a typical type of carbonyl. And so an anhydride looks like this. That's the anhydride. An acid chloride, and I may bounce around in this table, top and bottom, in order to make these structures sort of fit in. An acid chloride has a structure where it's a carbonyl and a chlorine at the terminal end. The anhydride band number two, there's two bands for anhydrides, probably because there's two different sides to the anhydride. So we can have two different carbonyls. So we could think that we could have R1 and R2. That would mean that that I'm getting a carbonyl which would be band number one for the first carbonyl. And for the second carbonyl, I'm looking at band number two, where it's next to the second R group. So I can get two bands for anhydrides because there's two different carbonyls in an anhydride. In an ester, you guys know what an ester looks like. I've got the oxygen that's in there with the ester. The aldehyde has the hydrogen on the terminal end. The ketone has two different R groups. The carboxylic acid, you guys are familiar with, and an amide has a nitrogen bound to the carbonyl and may have or may not have a hydrogen on the nitrogen, may have one or more. So when I look at the wavelength that this was at, 1750 was the wavelength of that band. And so I come down here and I try to find 1750, and 1750 puts me sort of in this range here, and you go, well, shit, that's not really helpful. 1750 is in the anhydride and ester range. And so we might even look at this and say, well, this is either an anhydride or an ester. And that's not one of my choices. So my choices are for a ketone, A, and an aldehyde, B. And so based on that number, if I look at the numbers between the aldehydes and the ketones, that the aldehydes are always higher than the ketones. And so I would lean, because that number is 1750, I would lean towards the aldehyde even though the number does not match, because aldehydes in general have a higher wavelength than ketones. And this is the problem that I have with most IR tables, that most IR tables list numbers like this. And instead, what would be nice to see in a table would be able to see the table in a vertical sense like this, that would to say that I have aldehydes. Aldehydes are usually centered on 1725, but they have a range that they can go, where it can go up 30 plus units up here, so it can go up to like 1755, and another 30 units down, so it can go down to 1695. And that's the range in which I would see an aldehyde. Ketones, likewise, have a range, and they're centered on 1715. And they have that plus or minus sort of 35 range as well. So if I add 35 to this, then I'm at, 40, 50, so I can go up to 1750, and on down to 85 or 80, something like that. And so this has a lower range, but it also has a range. And that is true for the carboxylic acid, the amide, the esters, all of these have a range. And so this idea of simplicity of just a single number, and that number is the frequency that I'm always going to see for that functional group, is not an accurate one, and a dangerous one, because it leads you into wrong assumptions when you're trying to read the tables. So I don't know how to get around that, other than to show you just various different types of tables. Let me grab one more table. We wanted to stay there. Let me grab one more table from here. We'll copy this too. Let's bring that into our notes. We'll put it down here. So this is a table that gives me a little bit more of a sense of the different wavelengths that aldehydes and ketones can share. This one's really more about ketones than it is about aldehydes. But you can see in terms of ketones, while we can center on the 1715, that here's a ketone that's 1695, 1675, 1665, even down to 1640. When it's hooked up with an enol. And then Ringstrain can take these all the way up to 1817, 1780. So the range that I'm giving you for the ketones is even still a little bit more narrow than what it should be, because ketones can encompass a much wider range than that. And so I think that's the first thing to note, is that when you look at the numbers, don't read the number as an absolute, but read the number as that it's giving you a range of possibilities, and we need to decide which sort of one that it fits. And then, of course, there's no way to know that you're right or wrong until you look up a reference spectrum and compare the two spectra. And then in comparing the two spectra, we can see whether they match or not. We can look at the one that we think is a particular compound, the one that we know is that compound, we stack them on top of each other, and if we get a perfect match like a fingerprint, then we've identified the compound and we know exactly what the compound is. And so based on these numbers that we're looking at, based on the 1750, I would go with the fact that this is an aldehyde and that the answer would be B. And that would be the correct answer for this compound. This compound is butyryl aldehyde, and let me get rid of some of the markings. Well, maybe I don't want to get rid of the markings. Maybe I just want to bring this spectrum in one more time. Let me go get the spectrum and import it one more time. Think about how I just did that. I imported it by opening it in a window. I opened a PDF. Trying to remember how I did this. It's hiding here someplace from me. My windows are on top of one another. There it is. And then I shared this with myself through AirDrop. It'll come in and I'll send it to Notability. I'll add it to our note. We'll import it. It should drop in the next open spot. And then the way that I like to annotate these is to put in the compound. This is butanol. And the peaks that are important are the 1750 peak. So this peak is the carbonyl peak. And these guys over here are the carbon hydrogen stretch. And then everything else here is fingerprint. And these guys over here, I couldn't tell you what they are. Those are peaks that are just showing up in the spectrum. They may be a little bit of enol character. Enol character is an equilibrium that most aldehydes and ketones have. So when you have a aldehyde, aldehydes are in equilibrium, usually favoring the aldehyde, but to a large degree, also a little bit of what is called an enol, where they look a little bit like an alcohol. So this is the enol, this is the aldehyde. And there is what is called enol aldehyde tautomerism. And they are in equilibrium, much the same way that when you have water and you have two water molecules, that the water molecules are in equilibrium with hydronium and hydroxide. And that's the auto dissociation of water. That's your Kw, which is equal to 1 times 10 to the minus 14th in terms of the equilibrium constant for that. So water auto ionizes. This is the aldehyde enol tautomerism is much like the auto ionization of water. It just happens. There's an equilibrium between those two species, and you can never get rid of all of the enol, just like you can never get rid of all of the hydronium and hydroxide in water, because water just dissociates and does that. So that could be a little bit of enol character, which would give it the hydroxyl group. And what we may be seeing there is just a small amount of hydroxyl group character showing up in that spectrum. Okay, so that's where everything is kind of going. Let me bring people's faces back so I can see and chats and ask how that feels as looking at sort of a first spectrum and analyzing a first spectrum. Did that go okay? All right, I'll get a thumbs up from Jorge. Anybody else? Nicholas, Ann, cool.
Good.
All right, nice. Ready for another one? Let's try another one. Let's see what I can do. Let's go for this one. The technology in bringing these in is challenging. I am not going to lie. This is getting tricky. Okay. I need to add in a page after this. There we go. Okay. So here's the new spectrum. I'll zoom in on it a little bit. And I will make these numbers, I like making these numbers a little bit easier for you guys to read. 3050, 2946, this is 1710, 1394, 1242, 1126, and 730. Okay, so this is the spectrum that we've got now. And any sort of ideas about what functional group may or may not be in this molecule? Do we see any alcohols or amines in this molecule?
No.
No.
No. Okay, cool. Do we see any carbonyls in this molecule?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. So again, let's take this molecule and let's give some options. So A, let's make this, we'll go back to sort of the same sort of concepts. We'll make these molecules look a little similar. B, and C, we need another molecule here. And D, and let's put a double bond in this one too. All right. So in terms of this molecule, we can throw out a couple of things as well. So what we're looking at is in that range where we would see the alcohols over here, that range is empty. And so that's where alcohols would show up. It's also where carboxylic acids would show up. And because they're not present in the spectrum, I can throw those two compounds out. And so now what I've got to do is I've got to figure out, based on the carbonyl that I'm seeing. So here we're saying that this peak here is the carbonyl peak. And so I do have some sort of carbonyl. That I've got to go and figure out what that 1710 peak looks like. So what we'll do is we'll go back up to our table, which was hanging out over here. 1710 this time. Maybe I can bring that in again. Let me go copy that thing and just put it down here again so that we can look at it. Okay, 1710 is putting us here. Well, at carboxylic acid, really. 1710 is labeled as the carboxylic acid, but we know it's not a carboxylic acid. So in fact, as we're looking at 1710 there, and we have narrowed it down to the aldehyde and the ketone, that between these two, that because I'm looking at 1710, that is really pointing me towards the lower number, which is the ketone. And so out of the aldehyde or the ketone, I would then expect that the correct answer for this molecule would be the ketone based on the 1710 and the lower number.
Jason?
Yeah.
So do carboxylic acids also have a band at 1710? I thought they were in the...
They would, but they would also have... So if it were the carboxylic acid, what I would expect is that I would also get a pattern that would have looked something like this in okay. addition to the 1710. It needs to have both the hydroxyl group and the 1710 peak in order to be a carboxylic acid. Because in the carboxylic acid, you've got, if we look at the carboxylic acid, you've got both functional groups, the hydroxyl group here, and the carbonyl here. And so you get the two peaks happening simultaneously. So we get the hairy beard component that comes from the hydroxyl. I don't know, it would have looked something like this. That would have been in the 3400 to 3200 range. Plus up here, we would have gotten in the 1710 range for the carbonyl. And we would need to see both. Both would need to be present for it to be a carboxylic acid.
Very cool. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Excellent question. Okay, how did that go? Everybody get a sense of what happened there?
Why okay. exactly is it not the carboxylic?
Can you ask one more time? I'm not sure who was speaking.
Why exactly is it not carboxylic acid at the 710? Why is it a ketone instead?
It's a ketone. Okay, so in this case, we have ruled out hydroxyl group because hydroxyl group would have had the broad, smooth sweep to it that would have been 3400 to 3200. The carboxylic acid would have had the 3400 to 3200, which would have shown up in this region up here. So we would have gotten that for the carboxylic with the 1710. And then if it were the aldehyde, we would have expected this peak to be, that was the wrong pin. If it were the aldehyde, we would have expected this peak to be closer to 1780 for the aldehyde. That's where the aldehyde would have shown up. And because we're down at 1710, that's telling us that we're leaning more towards the ketones because the ketones come at lower numbers than the aldehydes. Okay, does that fix it?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. Anybody else? I know this is a very hard format to try to juggle all of these different images, and the more writing I put on the screen, the harder it is. So let me take this image and bring this image one more time into a new page, and then I will annotate it and show you what it is that I'm looking at. So let's share this, airdrop it. Trying to move these between my iPad and the computer where I'm working on them. Okay, I should drop it into that last page. There we go. We'll zoom in on this. So this compound now, this is a good spot to draw it over here, is this guy. Its name is cyclohex-2-enone. And the peaks that we are looking at are the carbonyl peak here at 1710. And there's a double bond peak that is in this too. And I think the double bond peak, I don't want to get it wrong. Where's carbon-carbon double bond? Let me make sure I know where, what it is I'm looking for. Triples, not doubles. I don't memorize these all the time. Monosubstituted, disubstituted. Right around 700, so it's probably the 730 peak that we're looking at. So it's probably this one. It's in the fingerprint range, which is why I tend not to look at it much. But this in the 700 reciprocal centimeter range, and it's got a pretty broad range in which it can show up. This peak is two R groups and two hydrogens in a cis conformation, for a carbon-carbon double bond. And because it's in the fingerprint, it's really hard to find, and I would not expect you guys to find that. Let's see, Katrina, 3,000 peak for the SP2. There's probably a 3,002. I'm sorry. This is the CH out of plane. The carbon-carbon double bond, Katrina, I think you're right, is above 1680 to 1600. And it's a medium to weak peak, 1680 to 1600. And I don't even see it in there. And the one that's above 3000, I'm hesitant to label that because those are the carbon hydrogen stretches. So that might be a CH in plane. 3100 to 3000 is the stretch. So the CH stretch for an alkene, this might be the alkene as well. So this might be the CH with the double bond stretch. Whereas these are the regular CH stretches. So those are places where things are showing up. But this is what we mean by interpretive power, is that I tend not to focus on things that I can't absolutely identify or that I need to spend a lot of time with a table trying to sort them out. I go instead for those things that are just immediately accessible and help me to try to find, figure out what functional groups are in this molecule and what functional groups are not. And I work with whatever options are given to me in terms of the molecules that I'm asking to judge whether or not this structure fits. And if I don't have options, if this is a different type of problem and I'm really just supposed to figure out and diagnose what the molecule is, then you can't do it just from IR. You need other pieces of information. So an IR itself does not tell you, unless you are familiar with the compound and know what the IR looks like, the IR itself does not tell you what a compound is. It only tells you what functional groups are in the molecule. It does not even allow you to rebuild a structure of a molecule. So you can't tell what functional groups are connected in what order by an IR. You need other pieces of spectroscopy. You need NMR and mass spec and together with FTIR. And then you can build a picture of what the actual molecule looks like. So for IR, we're really just trying to diagnose what functional groups are in our molecule. And can we get rid of some options and narrow it down to a smaller set and figure out, given a set of options, what the molecule is that's being represented in the IR? So thanks, Katrina. You were absolutely right. 3,000 peak for SP2. And that's for the CH stretch on an SP2 hybridized carbon. So that's where a couple of things are showing up there. All right. Questions? Let me bring everybody back so I can see faces, see how you guys are doing. Colin, you have a hand up? Are you waving at me, clapping? Or just, I didn't clear all the, there we go. I'll clear everything. Now we can see how everybody's doing. Okay, everybody looks like they're good. So we're ready for me to maybe pull in another molecule and see what we can do. All right, some of these might slow me down a little bit because those were ones that I had pre-processed. Let me see if I can remember how I was processing things last night and bring up a new molecule. This might take me just a minute or two. So be patient while I need some interlude music. We need like some elevator music to play. The problem with all these screens and Zoom up is that Zoom takes control over everything, and you can't background the Zoom easily. So while I've got two monitors up and an iPad, the Zoom is just messing with me. Okay, where do I want to go? I want to go to my download. Camera downloads. There we go. Okay, and let's get a single functional group. Let's get not too crazy yet. Okay, and that is not a pretty spectrum. Not what I wanted. We're going to open a new one. Let's go for 79. Also not what I wanted. Damn it. I thought I looked at these last night. Some of these, the problem that I'm having is that there is no central repository. Oh, okay. I see what's going on here. Sort of. I'm not seeing the entire spectrum. I apologize, guys. You're going to have to bear with me.
Elevator music.
Yeah, elevator music would have done it. There we go. Nice. I'm just dying over here. It's for some reason my my program that I downloaded last night to allow me to open IR spectrums is chunking and not showing me what it's supposed to. Something has changed on me. And it's not giving me the spectrum in the way that I expected them to be. All right, so let me see if I can, I was trying to get a carboxylic acid one and all my carboxylic acid ones are chunked, which means that there's a high probability that the other files that I grabbed are chunked as well, which would be really upsetting. Let me grab 623. That one's not chunked. We'll take it. Okay, I'm gonna label some peaks real quick. We will print this. Print it as a PDF. We'll open it in preview. I'll share it. I'll airdrop it. Should come in to notability. And lo and behold, on a new page, we've got a new spectrum. Okay, so in this spectrum, let me give you some options. Hey, That's not supposed to be in there. Okay. So the options for this spectrum. R A, go with the aldehyde. B, we'll go with the ketone. C, one, two, three, four, we'll go with an ester. D, let's bring in an amide. Okay. And for our spectrum, we have 2970, we have 1762, 1446, 1182, 1102, and 1010. Okay. So looking at these and looking at our possible compounds, our four possible compounds, is there any compound that we can immediately throw out of this set?
Can we throw out D, maybe?
Why would we throw out D?
Because I think, that group, it usually has like two fens, but I don't see it here. So maybe we can eliminate.
That's a good idea. So amides are a little different than amines. So usually when we have an amine, the amine having two hydrogens on it, usually in the 3400 to 3200 winds up having a medium-sized peak that has the two fangs on it. And that's clearly not represented in the spectrum because that would be showing up here and it's not there. So that's a good idea. Only this one happens to be an amide rather than an amine. And amides can present a little bit differently. But for the sake of argument, let's say that yes, that the NH would show up in there someplace, and we can at least cross off the amide because the NH is not showing up in the range where we would typically see NHs. So the NH is not there. So we will throw that one out. That may be the only one that we can throw out, and that the aldehyde and the ketone and the ester would all present with a carbonyl. And these are all presenting with a carbonyl at 1762. So we need to address that table again. We need to go grab that table one more time. And that table is hiding over here. We will copy this and bring it in one more time. And I know I keep grabbing this table and bringing it in, but it's the only way that I've got without jumping back and forth between a whole bunch of things to take a look and see where we're at. Okay, so 1762. We are at 1762, which puts us in this range here. At 1762. So esters, ketones, aldehydes, the compounds that we have, A is an aldehyde. B is a ketone, D is the ester, and so we're seeing that A would show up here, B, the ketone, would show up here, and C, the ester, would show up there. And so based on the trend that I'm seeing, the safest bet would be to say that this compound is the ester. Just showing where that peak is showing up at. And esters typically have one more peak that I like to focus on. So when we look at the ester, let me take the ester and bring the spectrum in one more time down below. So we'll come here and I'll airdrop this in one more time. And then we'll annotate the spectrum. And really, this is, I think I may have brought it in more than once. There we go. So this was 2,3,4-methylbutanoate. That's how we do an ester. And the carbonyl compound is showing up here. And that is our 1762. But the other really important peak, and I'm going to highlight it in orange because it's pretty critical. This is the CO bond. It's a carbon-oxygen single bond. And they're almost always fairly strong and centered around 1100. And so the CO bond that we're seeing there is this peak that is fairly strong here, that is at 1182. And that bond is our carbon oxygen sigma bond stretch. And this one was our carbonyl stretch. And so whenever I see a strong 1700 peak, I also take a look over around the 1100 area and look to see if I don't have a very strong band in the 1100 area, which would signify to me a carbon oxygen single bond that might be then an ester. And that's one of the ways that I recognize an ester. The area that's right here is the carbon hydrogen stretch, and there's not a whole lot to see in that carbon hydrogen stretch. The rest of these we would say are just fingerprint sort of spectral lines, and we don't try to analyze what every single line is that's in there. Okay, let me bring you guys back online, see where everybody's at. All my windows are obscured. There we go. Okay. And if we compare this ester spectrum and we go back and we look at either the aldehydes or the ketone spectrums, that what we can see is that there's no strong 1100 spectrum that would have been a carbon oxygen single bond in this spectrum. There's no back here, there's no 1100 strong bond that would have been a carbon oxygen single bond in this spectrum. So that what's recognizing that ester is that ester is really about both of these, the 1700 stretch and then a strong 1100 stretch that is signifying the carbon oxygen single bond. And that usually tells me that I have an ester. Okay, let's see what else I can find out of my spectrums that were working. I know which one I want. Let's see if I can find it. Some of these spectrum, when I imported them last night, I had a spectrum up on the screen and I thought for sure I was grabbing the right thing. And obviously when I'm looking at the spectrum right now, I did not grab the right thing, which means that I'll have to probably go back. Let's try 108. The other thing is they're all just listed by number without any names on them. There's a winner, 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 chicken dinner. Okay, let me bring this one in. Hang on. I got to annotate a few lines. Print it. Landscape, save it as a PDF. Open it in preview. Airdrop it onto the iPad. We get a new page. Okay, so so this spectrum, what we've got is 3351, 2933, here we're at 2855, 1450, 1063, 968, and I didn't do anything else down below that. All right, any sort of guesses as to what this molecule type could be or whatever functional group might be in this molecule? Just looking at the spectrum itself. Any shapes that jump out at you?
I see the alcohol.
Alcohol, good. Okay, so the alcohol peak is by the shape that we're seeing over here, that peak right in there in the 3351 is representing an OH. The CH is here, and then the rest of this is fingerprint region. And so yes, I could put down a couple of different molecules which this could possibly be, but the alcohol jumps out pretty easily when we look at these types of spectrums. So let me annotate this one and show you what structure this actually is. But yes, we're right, this is an alcohol. And this compound is actually cyclohexanol. And so what we're seeing is the hydroxyl peak, which is here, is represented in the peak there. So that's our OH stretch. And the carbon hydrogen stretches, which again are not so important, and the fingerprint region, which doesn't give us any more interesting structural information. There's no way that we would have just gotten cyclohexanol by itself. I would have had to give you a number of different compounds to choose from, and I would have thrown in some aldehydes, ketones, esters, or maybe even a carboxylic acid in there. But just from the shape of the structure itself, you guys were able to pick out alcohol for that structure, and that one is correct, that one is cyclohexanol. I was trying to find a good carboxylic acid, and I had downloaded a couple of them, but I'm not getting them. They didn't come across downloading the way that I expected them to, and I get a sneaky suspicion that the database is a little messed up. So let me see if I can find another one. I think the ones that had my carboxylic acids are kind of toast. Let me see if I can go back and actually re-download okay, so you're going to have to give me a second here while I figure out. I bookmarked a lot of these sites last night, and unfortunately, there we go. And what I want is this compound and its IR. And we'll take that liquid IR. And I'm just going to grab this guy and file print it in landscape mode as a PDF. And the one more thing that I need to do is clip it. And then share it. I was trying to clip the name out of it so that you didn't see the name of the compound. We'll see what sort of compound. So this one, actually, that's a little bit easier even to read. That's not so bad. Although I don't get the annotations. I can't annotate this one as easily. So I'm going to have to try to figure out what the numbers are. And they're also not giving me wave numbers, so that this is supposed to be, this is the thing that's killing me about this. This is supposed to be out at 4,000 reciprocal centimeters and on down to like 650 or 600 reciprocal centimeters. And they're giving me the wrong axis on this. And that's also not what it showed me. Hang on a second. Why did it come out that way? Because that is definitely not what it's showing me on the screen. Every time I click and ask it for the spectrum, in a number of different ways, it's giving me different images that are not helping me. Okay, let me try and do it this way. Sorry, guys, technical difficulties. Boy, that was challenging. Okay, I think I've got it now. not the way you want things to go when you're trying to lecture. This is why I was trying to do it last night, but as soon as it got to be about 12:30, my brain quit after working on this for about 4 or 5 hours. And I thought I had downloaded them all in a way that was going to work. And I did not. But now, yes, we have a spectrum. Okay, let me show you what was going on and why I was having so much trouble. For whatever reason, the website that I am using, which there are very, very few databases out there online. This is the other problem. And that for most of the databases that are out there, the databases are crap. The Spectrum are low quality, and the Spectrum have no way to annotate them. And so the Spectrum that you get are just not usable in the mode in which you are trying, or I am trying to use them. And so what's happening is that I have found a database, which is called NIST, that has spectra that can be downloaded in a digital format and then opened by an application and annotated. And that's what I was doing, is I was downloading those spectra, using them in that application, annotating them, and then outputting them. But what was happening is this spectrum that is ending, the top spectrum that I'm showing on the screen now, that ends right here, is showing you just this much. Let's see there. To there, it's like ending somewhere in this range on the spectrum. And it's not showing you the entire spectrum of the compound. And so that was really unhelpful. And although it said it was printing out the right thing, it just was truncating it. So this guy up here, which now I don't think I can get rid of. I don't think there's any way to delete it. So I'm just stuck with it in my feed, which is not what I want. Once it's imported, it's kind of in there. So we'll just cross this out. This is the spectrum that I want to look at. This spectrum down here, usually we would cut it and we would end the spectrum at this level, at the 4,000 level. And we wouldn't print out that far. So if we kind of take and cover up this much of it, and I can't delete it, but I can draw over it. This will make it much more recognizable and easier for us to read. Okay, so there's the spectrum that we want to deal with. And from there, what we want to do is recognize this zone that is in our sort of 3,400 to it really encompasses down even this far, that this shape is the classic sort of hairy beard shape that I get that is recognizable as a carboxylic acid. And the other peak that is over here is going to be really hard for me to give a number, but we're looking like we're at about 15, 16, 17. This is looking somewhere around 1730-ish, I would say, in terms of the peak that is there. And the compound that this one is, 2, 3, 4, 5, is pentanoic acid. And so the peaks that we're seeing are the carbonyl peak in that range, and then also the hydroxyl peak, which encompasses all of this. And then right on the edge of this are where the carbon-hydrogen stretches start to come through that peak. And so we usually generally consider the carboxylic acid peak to be that entire general shape, but it's the carbon-hydrogen stretches which are kind of stretching through that are telling me that that those carbon hydrogens are still there. And then down on this end is the fingerprint region. Okay, so that's a carboxylic acid. And And when you see a lot of these just flip through, I think the frustrating part too is that our instrument at Cabrillo is so good and our ability to be able to take spectrum is so good that we generally get textbook quality spectra. And I'm able to, once everybody goes through the unknowns, we're able to go back into the IR room and flip through everybody's unknowns and look at all of the images and see what all the images actually look like. And we can just rattle off the functional group names after having looked at a whole lot of spectrum. And that's what I tend to do within this lab. And so you get to see a lot of spectrum and we don't correlate them with the actual compound all the time, but we do correlate them with functional group. And so you get this idea, a quick idea of being able to see functional group within the spectrums. But I think that what I'm trying to highlight here is really just those two areas, the 3500 to 3200, which is the hydroxyl group, and the 1700, which is the carbonyl, and then narrowing down what type of carbonyl, going to a table and narrowing down what type of carbonyl it actually is. And I had envisioned putting these together in sort of a quiz type format where I have a number of compounds for you to choose from. And I thought today was going to go a whole lot smoother, but it looks like over 60% of the spectrum that I downloaded, once I actually found them and downloaded them, it didn't download what I had seen on the screen. It downloaded just a short subsection of what was being shown on the screen, which is entirely unusable and unfortunate because there was no way for me to know that it was doing that. I wasn't viewing the file after I downloaded it. I was viewing what they said was on the screen and downloading the file and thinking I was getting the right thing. And I spent an enormous amount of time getting that set up last night, but at least I got something out of it. And the first couple of ones we got to use in sort of like a quiz type format. So let me open it up for questions there and see, hopefully I didn't bore you or confuse the crap out of you and not my most successful lecture. But how are we doing? Colin's still with me. Anne's with me. People are still paying attention. Roxanne, Nicholas. Okay, cool. From this point, I'm trying to figure out what more I want to do with this. I searched through, Cabrillo has been putting out a tremendous number, particularly within NASS. NASS has been putting out a tremendous number of online resources. And a lot of companies have been making online resources freely available for instructors to deal with sort of this online nature of what we've been doing. Very few of those are really organic chemistry. And very few resources that I have seen, actually really none, had any sort of quizzes for FTIR that I could just point us to. You really have to kind of construct them. And then finding the spectra themselves is the really challenging part to construct those quizzes from. So while I can do a quiz that is a standalone quiz, like I would give you in lecture and have a spectrum and then have a number of compounds that you need to choose from, in a large scale format, in a learning format, the resources really aren't out there that I have found yet, despite as much as I've been looking. So I think that, the one more thing that I could do is that in Pavia, they have a question section in Pavia that has different compounds and asks you how you would distinguish between the compounds spectroscopically. For instance, this is from Pavia. This is not exactly the way that I would like to do this. 1, 2, 3, 4. They have butanol versus butanone. And they want to know how you would distinguish between these two compounds in an IR. So what is it that I would look for in the IR to be able to distinguish between these two compounds? And what it goes back to is tables like this. That the aldehyde, I would expect at the 1725, and the ketone, I would expect around the 1715 in terms of the carbonyl. And so I'm really focusing in the type of carbonyl. But what we've seen is that when I throw the spectrum up there, that the carbonyls don't come at those specific numbers, and that literally or realistically, what I would say is that the aldehyde would be a number that would be farther to the left, and that the ketone would be a number that would be farther to the right in terms of its wave number, and that it may not be exactly 1715, but that I would use that 1725, 1715 as a range. And if I'm more to the left of that, then I'm going to choose aldehyde. If I'm more to the right of that, then I'm going to choose ketone. And that's how I would distinguish between those two compounds if I didn't have a reference spectrum to actually go and look at. The next set of compounds that they have is, and this is where I was trying to build my sort of quiz from, is they have this one that has two different cyclohexene knowns. So this one is cyclohexene-one, and this one is cyclohex-3-ene-one. And really we would put 1-one would be the correct way to do it rather than just put, because the ketone is going to be number one, sometimes we leave it off. But that would be the correct way to do it. And in looking at these two, the carbonyl looks like it would be the same. And so looking at the carbonyl and looking at that the carbonyl would be the same, only what's not the same is that this system over here, sp2, sp2, sp2 for each one of those carbons, this one is sp2, sp2, sp3, and then back to sp2, that this system is conjugated on the left, meaning all sp2 linked, and this one on the right is not conjugated. Conjugation, actually I was getting to the word conjugation, I didn't get conjugated. Conjugation changes the wavelength that we see the spectrum come out at. And I had a good table. Oh, I know where it was. Let's go back to look at, so these are both ketones. So we're expecting both 1715, but what we'll do is we'll go back to the lecture from the other day, and this little graphic right here that shows how conjugation can change things at the carbonyl. So if I'm conjugated at the carbonyl, it can redshift it as much as 30 centimeters. And so what I can expect to see is that going back to here, the one that is conjugated can get redshifted as much as 30 reciprocal centimeters due to conjugation. And so this one may come out closer to, let's see, 16, what do I need to go, 85? So this one would be expected to be about 1685 due to the conjugation. And this one would be expected to be closer to the 1715, not having the conjugation. We could also look for that carbon-carbon double bond, but the carbon-carbon double bond is going to be present in both spectra. And so that wouldn't help me as much. I really need to pay attention to where the carbonyl is and how the carbonyl is being changed by the conjugation of the double bond. So that's a tip there. Let's look at the next set of compounds. So the next set of compounds that they have are an amine, actually two different amines. So this one is a secondary amine and a primary amine. Okay, so here, this one looks at the 3400 range. And so if I'm looking in that range that is around 3400 on down to 3200 reciprocal centimeters, that what I would see here is just the one spike. And for the primary amine, I would be looking at two spikes. And this would be sort of a medium-sized peak for both. Is what I would expect to see. So just picking out those differences between the primary amine and the two hydrogens giving the two peaks. I guess I said primary, that was the secondary amine giving the single peak, and the primary amine with two hydrogens giving the double peaks. Let's see. What else do I need to show you guys?
Jason, can I ask a question?
Please.
So what do you mean by secondary degree and the primary degree?
That's a good question. All right, so when we look at a carbon, carbons can be broken down into the type of degree of carbon that they are. So that when I have a carbon that has only one other carbon attached to it. This is like a methyl group. We say that this methyl group is a primary carbon. It has only one other carbon attached to it. When we look at a carbon that has two carbons attached to it, this is a methylene, a CH2 group. That's what we say is a methylene. The methyl group is a CH3 group. A methylene is a secondary type of carbon. A carbon that has three other carbons attached to it is a formal group. And this is just a CH group. This is a tertiary carbon. And then a carbon that has four other carbons attached to it, I don't know that we have a name for that other than we call it a quaternary carbon. And that quaternary group is fourth degree. When we look at the nitrogens and we have a nitrogen that has two carbons on it and has a hydrogen and a lone pair, because of the two carbons, this is classified much the same way. We classify this as a secondary type of amine. So this is a secondary amine with two R groups on the amine. A nitrogen that has just one carbon on it and two hydrogens. Because of the one carbon, this is a primary amine. And then we can also go to tertiary amines. So I have all three carbons, no hydrogens. This is tertiary. And a nitrogen that has four carbons on it, the four carbons actually give the nitrogen a positive charge. And so this is called a quaternary ammonium. because it's an ion. So the way that we distinguish between amines is by how many carbons are bound to the amine. One carbon, primary, two carbons, secondary, three carbons, tertiary. So when we're back up here and we're looking at these structures, the secondary nature of this amine is telling me that I have two carbon groups attached to it. There's the secondary. The primary is telling me that I have just the one carbon group attached to it as an overall group, not counting how many carbons there are in the chain. It's just looking at how many different chains are attached to the nitrogen.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Alcohols are classified differently. So this is an important differentiation that when we look at an alcohol can be on a terminal end, or an alcohol can be in this type of format, or an alcohol can be on this type of carbon. So these types of alcohols, this is a primary alcohol, a secondary alcohol, a tertiary alcohol. The alcohol is classified by not how many things it is connected to, but by its connection point. So in other words, this alcohol is on a primary carbon. This alcohol is on a secondary carbon. This alcohol is on a tertiary carbon. So while we say it's a primary alcohol, what it means is, the interpretation is that it's on a primary carbon. This is a secondary alcohol, but it's on a secondary carbon. Tertiary alcohol on tertiary carbon, which is different from the nitrogens. The nitrogens are literally being treated like carbons, whereas the alcohols are telling you what type of carbon the alcohol is attached to. So that's the difference. Thanks for this thumbs up. That lets me know that you guys are getting it and understanding it. So that's a good point too, in how we classify amines versus how we classify alcohols. Okay, any other questions that we can deal with? I'm feeling sort of beat up by this lecture and a little, I think I did what I wanted to come in and do. I just didn't do it as effectively as I would have liked to have done it. This is not one of my stellar moments, but I'll take it for what it is based on the limitations of what we've got here. All right. If you guys don't have any further questions, then I'm willing to call it good and close the books on spectroscopy for a little while, and then we'll pick it up in lecture, and we'll do Hammond postulate today. And I'm really looking forward to lecture today, because I think lecture today is going to be much more successful, shall we say. I've got a lot more to say about Hammond postulate, where I don't have to go and track down all kinds of spectrum and try to make it work. This is just, without having the instrument here and the compounds and being able to run our own, this is a challenging format. But I think that we got some good information out of it today. So I'm willing to hang out and deal with any other questions that you guys may have. And other than that, I think this is a good time to call it quits on spectroscopy for today. What do you guys think? All right. So I'll hang out here for a little while. Anybody wants to hang on the line and wants help with anything, I'm here for you. And other than that, I'll see you guys at 11:10.
Thanks, Jason.
Thanks, Jason.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
You're welcome, guys.
Thanks, Jason.
You're welcome, man.
Jason, I have a question.
Yeah.
So what do you mean by conjugated?
Okay, good question. Conjugated, when we look at double bonds, we usually start the conversation about conjugated in this sort of format. That the system on the left is conjugated, whereas the system on the right is isolated. So conjugated means that the sp2 carbons are all in a line, unbroken. Whereas over here on the right, the sp2 hybridized carbons are broken by a sp3 hybridized carbon that sits in the middle. And that isolates the two systems.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is that in the system that is conjugated, when a system is conjugated, you have pi systems that are all linked together and talking together. Let me try to draw this not so sloppy, and I'll try to put a little more effort into the drawing here. What happens in this type of pi system is that we get basically molecular orbitals which span over the entire molecule, and they act as a giant pi bond such that there is actually a barrier to rotation about this bond, such that it looks kind of like this. The barrier to rotation makes it difficult to rotate between a pseudo cis conformation and a pseudo trans conformation. And there's an activation energy barrier, E sub A, that is here that prevents these from rotating, because the bond that is in the middle is pi-like. And in order to rotate, I have to break the conjugation in order to rotate that center bond. Even though it's a sigma bond, there is not free rotation about that sigma bond. That's due to the conjugation and the fact that the whole system acts like a giant pi bond. The isolated system is different. The isolated system, having the sp3 hybridized carbon in the middle, has a pi bond here and here, and here and here. And so these are individual pi bonds, but there's no connection between the pi bonds, because the carbon that is here is sp3 hybridized and has no pi orbital, has no p orbital. Because of that, there's no barrier to rotation. There's free rotation about each one of these sigma bonds, and it can rotate freely. I was going to try to draw it with no activation energy, and realizing that there's still a small amount of activation energy, but the activation energy between these two systems is really, really tiny. It's just got a little tiny E sub A due to sterics. So this one is about sterics in terms of being able to rotate through and to and rotate through those bonds like that. Whereas this one is about breaking conjugation. And conjugation is not just with alkenes, not just carbon-carbon double bonds. Conjugation happens with all types of systems with pi bonds. So for instance, this system, we would say sp2, 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 and even the oxygen is sp2. This system is very much like having just a carbon-carbon double bond here. This is conjugated. And this guy on the left is conjugated as well. This is conjugated alkenes. This is a conjugated, what's called an alpha beta unsaturated ketone. So this is the alpha position, and the beta position. And the unsaturated means that I have a double bond there. So that's a conjugated type of ketone. If I take and I put the double bond out away from the ketone, then I break the conjugation. And that conjugation changes the wavelength of the carbonyl, because the system acts as a giant pi bond. It stretches at a different frequency than if it's not conjugated. And so conjugation can change the way, let's see if I have it here. Conjugation. So what this is showing is that those systems that are conjugated can move the frequency from the 17-15 that I would normally see down to lower wave numbers.
Got it, okay.
Okay, so that's what conjugation is doing for us.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome, that was a great question. You should have asked that during the lecture.
I should, sorry. I was afraid to interrupt you, that's why.
Never be afraid to interrupt me. Is there any time I'm doing things like that and you've got a question, throw it out there, change the direction of the lecture. Changing the direction of the lecture does not mean that the lecture is going in a bad direction. It means I'm addressing information that you guys need. And that's what I love. So never be afraid to interrupt me and throw me in a different direction.
Okay. I will definitely do that next time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Because you have great questions. So those are helpful to me.
Thank you. I'll see you in lecture then.
Okay. See you in lecture. Bye-bye.
Bye.